This is a Mexican Crossing Lines. Welcome to another edition of A Mexican Crossing Lines with your host, Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And today we are doing a special update on Standing with Standing Rock. Many of you have probably heard the special program that we did about what is happening at the Sacred Stone Camp at Standing Rock. And today we are doing an update to let folks know what has been happening since then. A lot of what we will be talking about today will be based on the story that came out of the Sacred Stone Camp about the tribal gathering there facing aggressive state repression and media manipulation. Mm-hmm. And we will hear from the voices of the indigenous people that are on the front lines of this issue that have been going and speaking to the media, like Chairman Archibald Winona LaDuke,
yeah,
Deborah White Plume, and others. And you will be able to find out what you can do to stand with Standing Rock at the conclusion of our program today.
Mm-hmm.
Part of which is becoming better informed, listening to independent media like what you're hearing here at 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. We are also broadcasting on Shoutcast. You can find us on your radio dial in the FM area at 88.1 FM, but you can also listen to us online by going to kpppfm.com.
And we definitely want to hear from you. You know, there's ways to get a hold of us. You can contact us at 701-566-0917. It's a call-in line. You can leave a message. We may air it on the air. Tell us your name and where you live, and we'll go from there. You can also tweet us at media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or Duke at kpppfm.com. To follow us, you can go to Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can.
And now I'm going to turn to the statement that was put out by the Sacred Stone Camp. You can go and find out more by going to sacredstonecamp.org and read it there for yourself. We will have a link along with this program for you to follow. But this is the statement that they put out about what's been going on. The historic gathering of tribes from across the continent in opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline continues in the face of aggressive state repression and media manipulation. Last Friday, Governor Dalrymple declared a state of emergency in order to make additional state resources available to, quote-unquote, manage public safety risks associated with the protest. Dalrymple has complained of outside agitators, quote-unquote, responsible for hundreds of criminal acts, quote-unquote, and called on federal officials to help. But LaDonna Allard, director of the Camp of the Sacred Stone, says, "The gathering here remains 100% peaceful and ceremonial, as it has from day one. We are standing together in prayer. No firearms or weapons are allowed. Why is a gathering of Indians so inherently threatening and frightening to some people?" On Monday, August 22nd, the Morton County Board also declared a state of emergency in order to access the funds released by the governor to request overtime wages, extra equipment, and money to reimburse other law enforcement agencies sending resources. This decision relies on a false narrative of violence put forth by Morton County Sheriff Kyle Kirchmeier, who last week announced outrageous, unsubstantiated claims of pipe bombs and gun violence at the protest site. Dallas Goldtooth, Keep It in the Ground campaign organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network, says, "These are dangerous statements by Sheriff Kirchmeier and only foster greater resentment toward between local Native and non-Native residents. Furthermore, we have women, children, and elders in our camp, and because of the sheriff's false narrative, those families now have to fear for their own safety. Meanwhile, the main road accessing the camp, Highway 1806, has been shut down by authorities since Friday. A military-style checkpoint is established at Fort Lincoln, where motorists are constantly surveilled with cameras and interrogated about their activities. Identities are recorded, and anyone suspected of traveling to the protest site is turned away and forced to travel a long detour. These checkpoints violate constitutional protections and international law by restricting freedom of movement without justification. They further isolate a people who are already extremely geographically and politically isolated. At the same time, police presence has been amplified on the reservation, and many have been racially profiled and harassed for no reason. On Monday, North Dakota's Homeland Security Director ordered the removal of state-owned medical trailers and water tanks from the camp, citing reports of unlawful activity and fears that the equipment would be unsafe. Tara Huska, National Campaign Director for Honor the Earth, says, "It is deeply ironic that the governor would release emergency funds under the guise of public health and safety, but then remove the infrastructure that helps ensure the health and safety of the camp. This is nothing but a repression of our growing movement to protect our water and future generations." The North Dakota Highway Patrol and Federal Bureau of Investigations also announced they are investigating two incidences of quote-unquote laser strikes aimed at surveillance aircraft patrolling above the camp. Why launch a federal investigation into a laser point instead of asking what right does the U.S. government have to fly surveillance planes over sovereign nations in the first place, asked Huska. So there have been a lot of complaints coming out of the camp about the ginning up of the rumors, because there have been no substantiations of any of these statements that have been going on. In fact, in Mandan, the children there were escorted by police to school.
Wow.
I mean, they're using a lot of resources of the state and of the policing entities that we have to
hype up their narrative of what's going on, which isn't true.
Which is intimidating people and also confusing and muddying the water. But let's hear from some of the people at the camp. This is Winaya Locke of the Indigenous Life Movement reporting on what is being said about pipe bombs and rifles.
So, North Dakota and South Dakota are still being really, really racist towards us. They're making derogatory claims. If they really felt that we had pipe bombs and loaded rifles that we were firing off, do you honestly think they would let 2,000 Indians sit in one place? Honestly, no. Because if they honestly thought we had pipe bombs and rifles, they would have open fired on us. Because, like, the black people, the Hispanic people can all tell you that. It's like common sense. Common sense, what, like, seriously. There has been zero murders, zero assaults, zero rapes at Sacred Stone or in the surrounding area. Again, North Dakota and South Dakota are being really, really racist towards us. So yeah, it's really disgusting, and it's really appalling. Amnesty International and United Nations have representatives on site with us, so thankfully the whole world is backing us up.
Respect our water.
Respect our water.
Respect our land.
Respect our land.
Honor our treaty.
Honor our treaty.
Honor our rights.
Honor our rights.
This is Dave Archambault, chairperson of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, in an interview on Democracy Now, speaking about the camp.
Right now, what's going on is it's about peace, and it's about prayer, and it's about uniting. And there's a really good feeling if you were to walk through the camp. There are no guns, no violence, no drugs, no alcohol. And it kind of took a life of its own. It evolved into something very special. The state on the other side has taken action, which there's no cause for. They created a barricade just south of Mandan, right before you get into Fort Lincoln, Custer's Park. It's about 25 miles north of the camp. And this barricade creates a hardship for the members who live on Standing Rock. The state also removed its emergency assistance vehicles that we initially got to establish and accommodate large masses of people. There never was any shots fired. There never were any pipe bombs. There were never any incidents of unlawful activity taking place. When you have a large mass of people in an area, especially with social media, you have Facebook that can create rumors. And I would ask that the sheriff and the governor validate any rumors that they come across before they make haste decisions on to create a blockade or to declare a state of emergency or to remove any of their emergency assistance vehicles. I understand they have safety concerns, but you just have to be present at the camp and you'll see that it's a peaceful place and there are happy people that who share a common prayer.
Public defender for Standing Rock, James Cerny, had this criticism of the Forum of Fargo's front page report asserting, quote, criminal activity grows as the population of the pipeline protesters is estimated between 2 and 4,000, stating the following. I am the public defender for Standing Rock. I see all the criminal cases that come through the tribal court. Here are the number per offenses per crimes committed by protesters. Homicides, zero. Aggravated assaults, zero. Rapes, zero. Drug charges, zero. Simple assaults, zero. DUIs, zero. Trespass, zero. Disorderly conduct, zero. Speeding, one. That's it. One speeding ticket. Get the facts, Fargo News. Misrepresentation of the peaceful protesters at the Sacred Stone Camp isn't the only thing that the media is getting wrong. Sacred Stone Camp defender Mary Knox had this to say on social media. Some things that every story get wrong. Number one, trains spill very few gallons of crude oil for four decades, until restrictions were lifted on the number of tankers and trains and on their maximum speed. In addition, we need to invest money in repairing tracks across the nation, as most have seen cuts in DOT spending. Number two, the horrific crash in Quebec was a train speeding on autopilot downhill. This is a huge safety issue that might have been avoided. Number three, the company is pushing for this pipeline now that they can sell oil on the overseas market after the ban was lifted in December 2015. Number four, pipeline detection technology failed in South Dakota on the Keystone pipeline, spilling in excess of 18,000 gallons before the spill was discovered by a farmer. This occurred just last March 2016. Number five, pipelines are known to leak benzene and methane in the form of noxious and cancerous gas that settles back onto land and water. This phenomenon has been measured and recorded in Houston. Number six, no environmental impact study has been completed on this pipeline, and pipelines of this magnitude have never been bored under rivers as wide and as turbulent as the Missouri and the Mississippi. And this pipeline will go under those rivers, plus the Des Moines, the Upper and Lower Skunk, the Illinois, and many other lakes, streams, and watersheds, and the aquifers therein. Entire regions of the Midwest and downstream are potentially threatened. Keokuk, Iowa, for example, would have to shut off its water intake within an hour if a spill occurred on the Mississippi, where this is slated to pass. There is no water source backup. Businesses would have to shut down as well. I've not even gotten into the eminent domain abuse issues. Many century farmers are concerned that their topsoil being damaged and their property values being reduced and for crop damages. They have been bullied relentlessly by the company to sign over easements against their will and judgment and have been threatened with eminent domain. Let's listen to Winona LaDuke about how the DAPL pipeline ended up in North Dakota from a clip with an interview on Democracy Now!
Yeah, our reservation in northern Minnesota is the proposed site, our territory, for the Sandpiper. For the past 4 years, I've been fighting the Enbridge Company. The Enbridge Company is proposing three new lines through our territory. One of them is the Sandpiper, and that would cross, affecting basically by the time they're done, five of our reservations would be affected by these pipelines, which would go by the Mississippi River and through the heart of our wild rice beds. Enbridge has been pushing for a brand new corridor because they have this old corridor. They say it's got, you know, six pipelines in them, all about 50 years old, kind of fallen apart pipelines. And so they want to, instead of clean up their old mess, they want to make a whole new mess. So for 4 years, we've been fighting them and telling them they cannot do that. And the courts, you know, had ruled it in our favor, and now a full EIS is required, and the tribes are demanding that the process include them, and the tribe should have some stay in it. So I was really surprised because Enbridge told us all that the only thing that they could do, it was so important to them, the only way they could get their oil to market was to run it through northern Minnesota. And then one day I wake up and they forgot all about us and they move out there to North Dakota. Seemed very disingenuous to me.
All of this, of course, is due to the oil boom in the state of North Dakota. Let's listen to a We Are the Media clip about some of the history.
Did you know that North Dakota has become the second largest oil producing state?
North Dakota, with the big shale oil boom.
North Dakota's oil production climbed to 810,000 barrels a day.
This is the California gold rush, but in North Dakota in the 21st century.
Oil spills have also gone up to historic levels.
North Dakota is where a farmer harvesting his wheat field discovered the massive spill. More than 20,000 barrels of crude oil leaked from a buried pipeline in late September.
An oil spill has created a slick that stretched for miles.
Crude oil spewed out of the ExxonMobil pipeline.
While pipelines are leaking and oil trains are exploding, oil and gas workers in North Dakota are putting their lives on the line.
TransCanada Company shut the Keystone pipeline down, effectively stopping its operations for the moment while the leak is being determined.
ExxonMobil pipeline burst, spilling out thousands of barrels of crude oil.
So we're looking at a 640,000 barrel per day pipeline, and they're looking at, you know, now it looks like we're looking at this other pipeline out here. But, you know, that is what's going on. And out here on the front lines, the question is, you know, at what point are we going to quit? At what point are we going to quit doing this?
We're protecting the water. Our water is life. We will not let it get desecrated. No pipelines on this.
We don't drink oil, we drink water. Meaning wash day, water's for life. Machoni. And I'm gonna sing a song for you. My Indian name is Shichinanji Bastard Strong. Stand up for you guys.
Oh Kashi Loya. Oh She Wana Weyo. Oh She Mini 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 Wash Day.
From the front lines of the Sacred Stone Camp, Indigenous leaders and activists expressed their resolve to protect the water no matter what, and why Indigenous people protect Mother Earth, our water, and our future generations. First, we will hear from Deborah Whiteplume.
The need to protect this water has grown way beyond Standing Rock. I'm Oglala in Northern Cheyenne. Many Red Nations are here. Many more Red Nations are coming. We put the call out for water protectors to come, land defenders to come. And the word resistance is being used. And sometimes we have a problem with the English language, deciding which word to use. But if we just listen to our spirits, we're here to protect sacred water. People will come from all along the river to protect the river that they belong to. We're putting the call out for warriors to come here to do direct action, to stop them from boring under this water, because that's going to contaminate it. We can't stand for that. We can't let that happen. I, for one, made a commitment. They're going to have to kill me, or they're going to have to lock me in jail. But I'm going to stand to protect this sacred water. And I'm guided by spirit. I understand that rage. I fought with cops before. I've been shot at by police. I've been shot by police. We got it on with the police on Pine Ridge back in the day. So I understand that rage. But when we're here together to protect sacred water, let's do it with dignity. Let's do it with training. Let's do it with unity.
Now let's hear from Dennis Banks.
What's happening here is equally as important because of the stand that you're ready to make. When they threaten the environment, they're threatening you. We are part mountain. We are part ocean. We are part river. We are part flower and grass and tree. All of this. We are part of all of it. So when they threaten the environment any place, they're threatening you. You have to be in that mindset like that. That's who you are. That's who we are. And our culture, our heritage, is what has made us warriors.
Amidst the media bias reported by Indigenous people, many have raised questions about the conflicts of interest between Governor Dalrymple and the oil interests in North Dakota. Brandon Eldorf Maui, a member of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, posted about the lack of discussion from media on the conflict of interest and the lack of ethics, saying, "The article being shared on social media by the Bismarck Tribune of our governor owning stock in oil is 3 years old. What I have found fascinating and disturbing is that the shares of stock in which he owns is ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil is the owner of XTO Energy, which operates in 8 counties here in North Dakota. The Dakota Access LLC, a subsidiary of Energy Transfer, would transport that oil, which our governor owns shares in." Finally, Dakota Access LLC states that $32.9 million is estimated in state sales tax revenue to be generated during construction, and $13.1 million is estimated in property tax revenue to North Dakota during the first year in service. Gosh, that's pretty tempting to a state with a $1 billion shortfall in their budget. Remind me again why we don't need an ethics committee? During a Democracy Now! Interview, Winona LaDuc also raised questions about North Dakota's close ties to the oil industry.
Well, what I found out in North Dakota is that, you know, the state of North Dakota has been bending over backwards for the oil companies, although the fact is that there are now more lawsuits than active drilling rigs out there, you know, because they were such a big push to develop all this oil in the Bakken and basically bust up the bedrock of Mother Earth, put all those chemicals in it, look the other way and pretend like things are going swimmingly out in North Dakota. So North Dakota has got this landlocked oil. They're taking a beating on it right now. There is an 85% drop in active drilling rigs in the Bakken. Fact is that they don't even have it going on out there, but they are bound and determined to get whatever oil out of there they can. And so they decide to throw this pipeline through. And, you know, North Dakota's regulators are, I would suggest, really in, you know, I would say in bed with the oil industry. And they have looked the other way. And so they have pushed these pipelines through, you know, really, really fast without any tribal consultation and without a full environmental impact statement. And that's what needs to happen. You need a full environmental impact statement on this. And, you know, I say what we say is that you should have a well to wheels impact. In other words, it's not just hauling the oil. It's not just endangering all those, you know, watersheds. It's not just the fact that, you know, former editor of Scientific American, Trudy Bell, says 57% chance of a catastrophic leak. It's not even just that. It's what about all that carbon? We're sitting here and, you know, in this world where there's been no rain in Syria for 5 years. There's catastrophic storms everywhere. And this pipeline is going to bring about 250,000 per day tons of carbon into the atmosphere. That's what this Dakota Access Pipeline is. And that's wrong. You know, a private corporation doesn't get to destroy things. A Canadian corporation at that. Enbridge isn't even a U.S. corporation. You know, Enbridge is a Canadian corporation, and they have no right to destroy our water, no right to compromise our future.
We stand!
We stand!
For water!
For water!
For life!
For life!
We stand!
We stand!
With our brothers!
With our brothers!
And our sisters!
And our sisters!
We stand!
We stand!
With our people!
With our people!
For one nation!
For one nation!
We stand!
We stand!
Indigenous leaders, as well as environmental activists and actors from all over the country, are now pouring into the Sacred Stone Camp with the singular goal of stopping the Dakota Access Pipeline. As we heard from Deborah Whiteplume, some are willing to give their very lives to save the water. And Indigenous leaders like Winona LaDuc express very clearly why everyone should fear the greedy corporations trying to push these pipelines like Enbridge, Keystone, and the Dakota Access Pipeline through the chains of command so quickly, and why that makes her fear for the future. She says these companies aren't just greedy, they're dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, Enbridge is not doing so well. You know, I've been writing letters. I kind of feel like that Roger and me thing. I write letters to Al Monaco, the president of Enbridge. I say, hey, it's Winona down here on White Earth wondering about a few things. They had, you know, a few catastrophic blow-ups last year. And then this year, first of all, June 30th, they lost this big pipeline. You know, Enbridge is in the pipeline business, the Northern Gateway Pipeline, $7.9 billion proposal. They thought they had it with the Harper administration. You know, that was looking pretty good up in Canada. Stephen Harper. Trudeau gets in. Every tribe along the way, every First Nation along the way, and the province of British Columbia is opposing this pipeline, which would take it to Port Kitimat, you know, really pristine area with all these fjords. Anyway, what happens is the Canadian Federal Appeals Court rules that all of the permits are void, that in fact Enbridge and the government have to go all the way back and talk to the First Nations tribal consultation. I had it really hurt Enbridge quite a bit. $7.9 billion pipeline. You know, we got them on the ropes there in Minnesota. They're now in an EIS process, although they would have liked to kind of like skirt around that. But the citizens of Minnesota and the tribes have forced that process. And then you add this little problem. It's called the faulty pipe scandal. What happened is that in July, it was announced in National Observer, National Energy Board leak, that Enbridge and this other company called Kinder Morgan had purchased these pipes from called Canada Oil, and it's a Thailand-based company, discount pipes. They purchased all these pipes and valves that are faulty. And the National Energy Board of Canada, Canadian government says, emergency situation. Where are those pipes, Enbridge? Enbridge's lawyers have said they need time to disclose where exactly all those pipes are. Now, I'm sitting here, and in northern Minnesota, we got six lines crossing through our really good ecosystem. I'm wondering if some of those pipes are there, or maybe they're over in a pile by Lake George next to my reservation. We would like a full disclosure as to where the faulty pipes are that Enbridge has. You know, look at that, and then they got a 40%, their shares are down now, a 40% drop in their shares, you know, from 2 years ago. So I feel like Enbridge is not looking so good, not looking so good to their shareholders, and they got a lot of liability they're putting on us, on Americans, on Native people, and trying to force it down the throat of the Standing Rock people. And I feel like that company is not a reliable corporation.
And now they want to poison the Missouri River. But we come here today to tell them you're not going to drill under our water. You're not going to poison what good water we have left. Today, as I sat here, a reporter asked me about our people being violent. Are we going to be violent? I said, no. We come here with our children, with our grandmothers, with our mothers, our aunties, our women. We come here with our sacred Chanumpa, our sacred staffs, our sacred eagle feathers. So we come here with prayer, and we're fighting this pipeline with prayer. The only violence that will happen will come from the cops on their side, because we stand in unity with peace, with our elders, the way they asked us to come. They said, warriors, come, but bring your Chanumpas, bring your families. Come in peace and help stand to protect the water. So from all four directions we came, all different nations, all different colors, to stand up for water, the water of life. Whenever we're born, when we're in our mother's stomachs, we're in water. It's the first medicine that's given to our people, is water. And this we must protect for the next seven generations so we can have healthy babies, healthy leaders. And so Mataakiopi, I want to thank all my relatives, all my brothers and sisters, aunties, uncles, grandparents for being here today, for making a stand for what is right, the sacred water of life. At this time, they're getting ready with a few more banners back there, and then we're going to walk across the bridge, and I'll let my brother here let us know what's going to happen. And so anyway, Mataakiopi, Lila Wopila, Chicha, Hohecha Tula.
We have some relatives here from that came from a long way. They wanted to offer a song. Our relatives are from Hoopa Nation, Northern California. So I'm gonna hand it over here to them, give a recognition and pride for all our relatives. So let's make some noise for our relatives from Hoopa.
Locke of the Indigenous Life Movement reports on the court decision, or should I say, lack of decision, on the Dakota Access Pipeline and what that could mean for the future of the Missouri River water and the water protectors at the Sacred Stone Camp.
Back in March of 2016, I was sitting in a room full of lawyers. They were environmental lawyers, civil lawyers, and criminal lawyers. And the topic was Dakota Access Pipeline coming into treaty territories that belong to Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. And at this panel of discussion of how we were going to handle this legally, a non-Native lawyer stood up and said, the treaties not only protect the Lakota Dakota people, but they also protect the non-Natives too. And today, Judge James E. Borisberg says there is a legal issue because there's a lack of consultation factor between the tribes and Army Corps of Engineers. And that's going to be a great victory for us. Even though he needs time to do research and he has to think about his decision, he said he will have a decision by September 9th, and by September 14th will be the hearing. So this is a great, it's really good. It looks like it's going to rule in our favor as of now, because we are a sovereign nation. We are protected by treaties, and entities like Dakota Access LLC and North Dakota and South Dakota need to respect our sovereignty and honor our treaties. And it looks like the U.S. District Courts are going to uphold it. I'm not saying they have yet. They haven't made their decision, but they're saying that the main issue is lack of consultation, and they need time to do the research. So I'm just like really relieved, because 10 million people's drinking water is a lot. And the Missouri River is historic, but it's also one of the longest rivers in North America. And if it gets contaminated, we're jeopardizing 10 million people. And it looks like our treaty rights, our consultation, our sovereignty as a people are going to protect that 10 million people. Lakota Dakota Treaty Territory, it looks like it's going to protect 10 million people's drinking water. Just let that sink in. Oh my God, that's incredible. That means camp still needs to keep going, at least until September 14th. So from now until September 14th, we still need those prayers for us. We still need supplies. We still need the legal fund because, hello, remember Dakota Access LLC is suing us and there is a restraining order on us. But they cannot bore, according to the Army Corps of Engineers decision, they cannot bore or drill until this decision by the U.S. District Court is made. So we still need to be vigilant. We still need to stand guard, protect of our Missouri River. So hence camp, Sacred Stone Camp, and all the other two camps that are up, Red Warrior and Ocheti Shakoi. We still need assistance. We still need water because remember North Dakota, you know, they were pricks and they took all our water from us. And then local media from Bismarck, local media in North Dakota and in South Dakota are still being really racist towards us. So if any of you guys have a good hookup to a network like CNN or CBS or ABC, NBC, if you guys have a good hookup, send them our way. Because South Dakota and North Dakota local media is still depicting us as criminals when we're in fact, educated, qualified, knowledgeable indigenous people. The barricades are still up. I saw earlier that someone said that they were down. No, that's not true. They are still up. So we still need assistance. We're going to have to hold steadfast until September 14th. Thank you so much for everyone that sat down and prayed and for standing with Standing Rock, because it means a lot to me because I'm Standing Rock. My children are Standing Rock. My parents are Standing Rock. So you guys are keeping us strong. So anyways, I'm just really, really happy. I'm really grateful. Just a reminder, keep, you know, be kind to each other. Be nice to each other. Treat each other like relatives. Doksha.
Yambigi,
Charles agreed upon is that we stay here, that we keep gathering, that we bring more people to this camp. We keep asking more nations, more water protectors to come and gather here. We're here in peace with the Chanupa. We have the keeper of the Chanupa here with us. We have to show the world that we're not fooled by these games that they play with us in the court systems. So the only decision today that came out of this Lajaw meeting was that we're going to stay together and stand together. We're going to come together as a whole camp, and we're going to ask people for ideas on what to do. It's going to be out in the open. There is no secrets here. When the Lajaws go and meet, there is no secrets here. They want you all to know that. They respect and honor every single one of you and your opinions here. The Lajaws are happy that the people are here gathering to protect the sacred water. The Lajaws from this land are happy that we're here. Every single group that is here is useful to each other. We need each other. We have to stand together in unity to protect sacred water and Mother Earth. We stand with our Chanupa. We stand with our wives and our children and our grandparents. We stand as Ozuye to protect Mother Earth and the sacred water. Mini Wakayalo, Mini Wichoni. So my relatives, we're going to continue to stay here, to gather together, to share ideas. We have a lot of different groups that have resources, media, law, non-violent direct action, trainers that can train us. Those of you who never had those trainings, we encourage you to go to them to learn how to stand on the front lines, to use your bodies. We don't use weapons here today. There was a time when some of our parents used weapons at Wounded Knee, and they reawoke a spirit that tells us who we are within our identity, whatever nation we come from. But today we cannot do that. The government will come in here and wipe us out. But when they see us stand in unity in prayer, they get scared. They don't know how to react to that nonviolent direct action. How do they come in and take down a grandmother standing with her grandson? How do they come down and take a son and mom, brothers and sisters who are standing together, locked in arms, to protect our sacred water? So my relatives, we encourage all of you to stay here. We're going to continue planning. We're going to continue growing until this judge's decision is against this pipeline. So my relatives, be strong and have courage today. It's a small victory for us that he couldn't rule today. He didn't want to come out against us, but he's not for us either. Nope. So just keep that in mind, my relatives. We're going to keep meeting together, each and every one of us. We're going to have planning meetings out here where everybody could use the mic, where different groups could come together and help each other, use our resources to help each other. And that's what said was in the meeting, is that we can't divide each other. The divide and conquer ain't going to work no more. So we're going to stand together, my relatives. Each and every one of us are going to stand together. And the Lajaws are happy. I want you all to know they're happy we're here. And stay here. Get to know each other. Go to different camps and shake hands. Find out who your relatives are here. Don't just stay in one camp. Because we're all here for one reason. Water. Water of life, my relatives. So in a good way, I say Wopila for this beautiful day. And I want to thank our pipe keeper for coming and having a beautiful ceremony with us. We got to see the Wambui go free. And now it's time to free our water. Oh, Wopila, Hechatula. Oh, my relatives, I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Victoria Camp. My Lakota name is Kakaka Ina. I'm from the Oyuste Band on the Pine Ridge Reservation, otherwise known as Manderson. I come from the Wachini Scotch, Yoshpai.
Also, I'm half Ponca from the Ponca Nation. My father's name was Carter Camp. So I thank all of you again, and you know who I am. I'm willing to talk with anybody, to shake your hand, to be your ally here. Hecha tula.
We're going to get ready. We're going to walk over onto the bridge, take our flags with us. We're going to stop in the middle of the bridge, and we're going to offer tobacco to the sacred water. We're going to ask the sacred water to help us. We're going to say prayers for all our relatives who traveled to Washington to go to court to protect the sacred water for our generations.
Our nation, we stand.
If you want to show your support by standing with Standing Rock here in the Fargo-Moorhead region, you can drop off your donations for the Sacred Stone Camp between 9 a.m. and 11 p.m. at the Red Raven Espresso Parlor located at 916 Main Street in Fargo. You can join the Fargo Stand with Standing Rock Walk this week, Saturday, August 27th, at Oak Grove Park, located at 170 Maple Street in Fargo. Those unable to walk can meet up with supporters in solidarity at the Veterans Bridge at 5 p.m., where people will gather and speak in support of water protectors and collect donations for the Sacred Stone Camp. Both Fargo events are hosted by Jill St. John, and she and her events can be found on Facebook for more details and contact information. You can also find out how to send supplies by mail or donate to support the camp or its legal fund by going to sacredstonecamp.org.
How are you?
Back with you on Off the Hook Radio.
It's DJ Buddha Blaze. You know, Electric Powwow is going on tonight.
That's right, A Tribe Called Red. Are you going to check them out? Give me a call.
Let me know. Let's get into the latest from nation
to nation. This is Sisters.
Thank you.
driving me crazy, baby. Driving me crazy, baby. Driving me crazy.